Fossil resources such as gas, oil and coal are the primary source of direct carbon dioxide emissions, which are contributing significantly to the climate crisis. Scientists at ACIP and BOKU Vienna are looking for ways to turn CO2 into useful things and achieve cleaner production cycles of fuels, chemicals, food and feed. My name is Sophie Weinhandel and today Özge Atta and Simone Bachleitner will tell me how microbes can contribute to carbon neutrality. So welcome to a new episode of our podcast. My guests today are in Vienna. Özge Atta and Simone Bachleitner are here. They are postdoctoral scientists at the Institute of Microbiology and Microbial Biotechnology at BOKU Vienna. Hello, welcome.
Hello, Sophie. Thanks for having us.
The reason that you are here is that you've recently published a paper. But before we get into the subject of your paper, could you just briefly introduce yourself? Özge, maybe you want to start.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Sophie. As you said, my name is Özge Atta. I'm a researcher at BOKU and also ACIP. And my main interest is the yeasts, microorganisms, and their metabolism. I am trying to understand how they control their metabolism so that we can harness their ability to consume CO2 or CO2-derived carbon sources so that they can produce some interesting products for our society.
Thank you. Simone?
Yeah, hi. I'm Simone Bachleitner. I'm also a researcher at Dietrad Matanovic's lab at BOKU. And I think our research is very intertwined with Özge's research, actually. So we are also working with yeast, Comacatella puffi, and we are focusing on the production of organic acids in this organism. And we also want to utilize substrates that are allowing a more sustainable process.
All right, thank you. So the topic of your paper, or the title, is the potential of CO2-based production cycles in biotechnology to fight the climate crisis. So let's start with some context. What is the current situation with CO2 emissions, and why are you even dealing with this issue?
So as you said, Sophie, well, basically climate crisis is something that we see in our daily lives. And it's not just, you know, hot weather, actually, but we are talking about extreme weather conditions, maybe lack of clean water, and this will eventually lead to some social inequalities also in the society, which cause migrations and other social changes. And this is just something that we have to solve as a humankind. So that's why it's important for us to tackle this problem. And one of the causes of this climate change is the increase in the CO2 levels in the atmosphere. And I've checked some numbers, and actually now the CO2 that is joining to the atmosphere from the fossil fuels is around 40 billion tons. And this actually is getting increasing since the Industrial Revolution, like almost 1% every year. And that's why we have to do something with it, because increased CO2 levels eventually will cause more drastic results in the atmospheric CO2 and also in the climate crisis. So that's why our idea is then, but how can we, you know, fight with this? And if we can use this as a kind of an advantage for us, if we can use the CO2 to do something useful with it and decrease the amounts in the atmosphere. And actually, that's how we started.
I think the possibility that we have in biotechnology is that the yeast that we work with needs some carbon to grow, to produce stuff. And normally what we do is we can feed glucose. So glucose is a sugar, and the yeast can basically use the sugar for its carbon need. But CO2 also has one carbon. Basically, we managed that we can engineer a yeast that can actually use this carbon from CO2. And with this possibility, we can now feed the CO2 from the atmosphere to our yeast, which then can make some products for us.
All right, now we are already at the point, like, how you want to solve the problem. I read about C1 substrates in your paper. What is C1 and why C1?
So C1 substrates are substrates that contain only one carbon. And this can be, for example, as we already said before, CO2. But it can also be carbon monoxide, methane, which is also a gas, or formate and methanol. Carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and methane are gases. So these are gases which can be used as C1 substrates, but the other two, formate and methanol, are liquid substrates. And the advantage of the liquid substrates is that they are maybe more easily applicable. They are soluble. You can basically feed them to your cultures. And with the gases substrates, it's also possible to basically blow them into your reactors. So this is also a possibility.
Since we are a biotechnology podcast, let's get a little bit deeper into these biotechnological processes that you just started to explain. What exactly do we need to recycle CO2? So what are the biotechnological processes behind this? Maybe one of you want to explain that a little more in detail.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yes, it's a biotechnological podcast and we are very much into the microbiology. So maybe we can talk about some microbial cell factories. Of course, I'm not excluding the process engineering part and downstream part, purification, but maybe we can talk about a bit of microorganisms that they're able to use this C1 carbon sources. So in nature, there's a great diversity. And some of these microorganisms can use the C1 carbon sources. For instance, one of them is, of course, they are not microorganisms, but plants. They can utilize CO2 to produce something. But there are other cells, like algae or acetogens, for instance, that can utilize carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, and they just capture this and convert into some intermediate metabolites that the cells use afterwards to produce energy and other building blocks. And the other microorganisms are called methylotrophics. These methylotrophic microorganisms can use methanol or methane. These are also C1 carbon sources, as Simone mentioned earlier, and they can convert this methanol into building blocks. And this is especially important for us, or interesting for us, because Simone and I are working with methylotrophic yeast. Maybe we come to that later in the following sections. And we are using these yeasts to convert methanol into something interesting for us. Some other microorganisms like methanotrophs, for instance, these are able to use methane, a gas, as a substrate, again, to convert into other products. And actually, these microorganisms can be found in a very diverse environment, in the soil, on the trees, in sediments of marine or freshwater. So they're everywhere. But of course, and here comes the question, these microorganisms exist, but of course, we need to know their metabolism so that we can control and engineer it. And not all of these microorganisms are so easy to cultivate and so easy to engineer. And that's why actually what we want to do at the end as scientists and also engineers in that sense, we want to combine the advantages of different hosts, of different microorganisms, ideally in one host organism for higher production yields. And they are easy to engineer, they are easy to cultivate, and the process optimization is just, you know, easier, and we can scale it up. So we want to know the properties of different microbial cell factories or different microorganisms and put all the beneficial properties of this into one host and then use this as our main producer.
There are natural and synthetic C1 utilization pathways. Could you quickly explain what's the difference? Which one is relevant for what?
Natural pathways are basically pathways that exist in nature. And as Özge already said, different organisms can have different pathways for C1 utilization. And I think right now there exist 7 that are known. And synthetic pathways are basically pathways that are engineered by us, humans. And here we just engineer the things that we would like to have in one pathway. So synthetic pathways can be really anything. It really depends on what basically, which enzymes we engineer, what we want to do. And this gives us a huge variety, how we can modify a pathway, how we can basically add new reactions to a pathway. And this also enables us to give a microorganism new features, like giving the yeast we are working with the feature that it can utilize U2. And here we can, of course, use reactions that are known in nature, but we can modify the enzymes for that. We can make small modifications and so on. So it's really building a pathway by its own. Right now, what we have to say is that these synthetic pathways, they enable maybe microorganisms a new ability, but sometimes we still need to work on the efficiency. So in our case, the yeast can metabolize CO2 and use it as a carbon source, but it's still growing very slowly. So it's not as good as, for example, microorganisms that utilize a natural pathway for that. And I think here we really need to find out the problematic steps and modify them.
Maybe you could also give an example of one of these natural pathways, for example. Like, is there something that you can give as an example for a natural pathway and for a synthetic pathway?
Yeah, I mean, one natural pathway is very well known, actually, that is called the CBB or the Calvin cycle, that is found in plants and in some other algae. And actually, this one of the enzymes in the CBB cycle that is called Rubisco, which is responsible to fix CO2 from the atmosphere and convert it to other metabolites, is one of the most abundant proteins in the world. It's everywhere. But this comes at a cost. So it's everywhere, it's very abundant, but it's very slow. So it can capture CO2 from a really low concentration, like from the atmosphere, but the whole pathway is not very fast. There are some other pathways, like, for instance, xylulose monophosphate pathway. We'll come to that also later. I have in mind. But this is also very similar to this Calvin cycle. But instead of CO2, it uses another C1 carbon source. It's methanol. And these xylulose monophosphate pathways are found in some bacteria, some yeasts. And yeah, these cells basically can grow on methanol. And there are some synthetic pathways. One of the most maybe interesting one could be called catch cycle. This catch cycle is based on really synthetic biology and modeling based pathway that's took different enzymes from different organisms and put them together so that the cycle is functional. It's not it's not a natural pathway. It doesn't found in natural hosts. So it functions very efficiently in theory, but the researchers never achieved to get it fully functional inside the cell. So in vitro, outside, it works perfectly, but we have put in a cell, it does not. So then these are really the challenges, because there are synthetic cycles that we know that works in theory, but when you put in a microorganism, it does not work. So there are different challenges that we have to solve.
And since we're talking about recycling CO2, more or less, which products can be produced from C1 substrates? So what is the final result that can be produced?
Yeah, a lot of researchers are focusing on different products, and right now, really, the list is growing and growing. So I think major products are acetate, ethanol, biodiesel, but also kind of high-value chemicals, organic acid, amino acids, so all kind of proteins. Yeah, so the list is really long. I think it makes sense to use CO2 for products that are needed in high amounts, because this gives you the possibility to really use a lot of carbon for your product, or a lot of CO2 for your product. And if you only produce a very minor amounts of a special product, this means you need less carbon. And then, of course, the sustainability might be not that given.
Mm-hmm. And which one is most promising in your opinion?
Yeah, we had a look at it. Which products can be produced microbially? So this was the first question that needs to be solved. And also, which products are needed in very high quantities? And here we have to say that we think it's plastics. So basically, plastics are really used in high quantities by us humans, and also produced in high quantities. Worldwide, 400 megatons of plastics are produced each year. So this is really a lot, and the number is increasing. And plastics derive nowadays, or a lot of plastics derive from fossil resources, but we can also use organic acids as building blocks for plastics. And organic acids are products that we can produce microbially, for example, with our yeast. So this means we produce the organic acid. This can be polymerized, and we can this then use as a building block for plastics. And when we now look at the chemical structure of these plastics, we can say that between 50 and 60% is carbon. And when this carbon derives from CO2, it gives us actually quite a great number how much CO2 we can fix when we use this as a carbon source.
When I listen to you, it sounds like the solution to our carbon footprint problem. But before, you also mentioned some challenges. What are the problems at the moment, and where are the challenges in this whole project, in this idea of recycling CO2?
Yeah, then maybe I can go on. First, I would like to add that, of course, whatever we are doing is not the solution to climate crisis. Of course, we cannot solve a huge problem like that just by producing plastic or foods or, you know, feed from CO2. So we don't want to sound like that. What we are trying to do is really to contribute to the part of the solution. But we know actually one of the challenges, maybe we can come to that with that one, is really we need to change our life and how we live, how this all world, you know, system is built. We need some public acceptance, we need the policy changes, and we need to change our consumption habits. And these are actually the main challenges in the society. But in the scientific part, of course, there are other challenges as well, as we talked briefly a little bit before. So the first thing is really to be able to produce these plastics, for instance, as Simona mentioned, in high quantities. This is a huge problem for us right now, because in the conventional production cycles, where they use mostly sugar-based materials, which derive on agricultural products, the quantities are much higher. And this is what we need to achieve to have a sustainable and feasible industrial process. But right now, our titers are quite low because we're just beginning of the development of the process. And this is definitely one challenge that we need to achieve. And this can be realized by, of course, maybe working on this synthetic pathways or modifying the existing pathways to increase the efficiency or just, you know, using really efficient hosts that can grow fast, that can produce at higher titers, and things like that. But We also run some numbers when we are writing the paper to be able to make sure that if it really makes sense to produce these products from CO2 in an economical level. And we did this calculation for polylactic acid. It's this lactic acid is an organic acid that Simone mentioned before, and it's a part of the bioplastics. And now this is being produced by conventional methods from like sugar-based feedstock. And if we can produce lactic acid from CO2 with a decent production cycle, and if we then compare the numbers with the traditional one, actually, we can compete with it. But of course, this means that we need to increase the yields, increase the production titers, so that the cost of producing per kilogram of lactic acid is similar to what we have right now. So in theory, it is possible, but we have a long way to go, definitely.
Okay, so let's get to an example from practice to not only talk about theory. Oskar, you have already modified a yeast called Pichia pastoris so that it can eat CO2.
Yeah.
Let's imagine it like that, and use it to produce organic acids that afterwards can be used in chemical industries. So perhaps you would like to explain a little bit more about this project from practice.
Sure. And actually, this Pichia pastoris yeast is a metallotrophic yeast. We talk about this metallotrophic yeast in the beginning, but just to remind, it's a yeast that is naturally can grow on methanol as the carbon source, another C1 carbon source. But a former PhD student in our lab, Thomas Gassler, managed to change this methanol utilization pathway so that the Saskanias utilize methanol into a synthetic Calvin cycle that is naturally found in plants in algae. So in that case, now these yeasts eat CO2, as you say, instead of methanol. And now we have this, we had this trait. It was very beautiful to see it's growing on CO2. But then the question that we ask, okay, what can we do with it, really? How can we use this strain for other purposes? And in a detailed way, the question we ask, can we use the strain as a platform for the production of organic acids? Because we know that they can make a difference. And we have different examples that we show that it's possible to produce organic acids, but I can talk about one of them. This organic acid is called itaconic acid, and it can be used in several industries as building blocks, as synthetic fibers, or in construction industry. And naturally, this yeast is not able to produce this itaconic acid, but we took the genes from other hosts that are not able to eat CO2, but produce itaconic acid. We took the genes from them and put them to the genome of this CO2 eating Pichia pastoris. Now this yeast can grow on CO2 and converts it into itaconic acid. So the titers, of course, this is just a state of the art study and is a proof of concept study, so that we are able to show that it is possible to produce a chemical from CO2. The titers we have is rather low compared to traditional ones, but as I said, this is a challenge we have to solve, and this is our job. We're gonna solve it eventually, but at least we could show that yes, it is possible, we can do that.
Okay, thank you. Let's have a look into the future. Which production cycles need to be implemented for C1-based bioeconomy, like an ideal future perspective?
Yeah, this action is actually quite hard to answer. Mm-hmm. It's very futuristic. In an ideal situation, of course, it would be amazing if we can use really the CO2 that we emit for our production cycles. So basically that the CO2 in the flue gases can be reintroduced, for example, in bioreactor experiments, where the carbon is then utilized by microorganisms and the product is made. This, of course, would be ideal. The thing is that these flue gases are not only enriched in carbon dioxide, but also in other gases that might be dangerous for the cells. So here we also need more research to find solutions. But what is also a big research topic right now is to recycle nutrients from grey water or from waste, basically, and use it in production cycles. And this is not only focusing on carbon, but also on nitrogen, on all kind of micro and macronutrients that can be used, which I think is really nice, because we shouldn't only focus on carbon recycling, but also on recycling of other nutrients that we need.
And do you think that C1 substrates will be able to replace traditional feedstocks someday?
We hope so. For sure, not for all products, because it really depends where you can use them. But for the production of organic acids, it's possible, for example. And if we can replace glucose with methanol or formate or CO2, this would be already a big advantage, because glucose derives from plants, basically. The plants need to grow on huge areas. They need to be watered. So there's a lot of energy there that can be actually saved. And if we can use C1 substrates instead, I think it would be very beneficial.
Good. So at the end, we are going to talk about you personally. Which question are you most interested in right now concerning your scientific work? Like, is there something that is the most important question at the moment that you want to solve?
Yeah, so I think what I am very interested in is, of course, pathways. How pathways are regulated, how they work, how they respond to environmental cues, to different process parameters. So this is something really interesting for us. And I also have the feeling that there's a lot unknown. So also when we run our experiments, we always encounter new problems, because things are not very well known and we need to adapt our methods and so on. So this is something I'm very interested in.
Yeah, I mean, as we said in the beginning, our research question and research area with Simone overlaps a lot. And what I can maybe add to that, like personally, is that, as Simone said, we actually don't know a lot about this pathways and metabolisms. Even though we work with these cells for a really long time, there's a lot we need to learn. But plus, what is very interesting for me is that, yeah, there are pathways in nature, for sure, that has evolved in millions of years. So there was a reason that why they evolved. But actually, these pathways don't evolve to make the cells like more efficient in that specific pathway. If they have, if this pathway gives them an advantage to grow faster, then it's good. But the cells don't think if I'm spending too much energy on that, if it's the most efficient pathway or not. So the question maybe here could be that, what if we can we really make a pathway that is really efficient, that the evolution worked out so far? So, and how can we do that? There are different methods, of course, that we are using, but having an ideal host, having a very efficient pathway in this ideal host, would be just amazing, actually.
Okay. And at the end, I guess there are some people who are listening who are interested in your research, who maybe want to do the same, who want to like have the same career path. So what are your pieces of advice for them? Can be personal, can be scientific. What what advice would you give someone who is now at the beginning of their studies?
It will be challenging. It will be difficult. Sorry, Simone, I didn't want to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to say, if you're really interested in something, stay curious. And as Özge said, it can be very challenging. So stay resilient and motivated. Then I think it's really worth doing it. And I think what drives us also is that we would like to have a positive impact on society so that our research has some, can be used for the greater good. Let's put it like this.
Yeah, exactly. Because at the end, I think what drove us here was our maybe like personal curiosity for sure. But at the end, what we are doing is, I think, really contributing to the society and to the whole knowledge about science or about the world around us. And I think this keeps me motivated when I see some challenges or some problems, you know, to go back and again think why I'm doing this in the first place, not just to, you know, satisfy my needs, but also doing really something for the people, for all the world around us. So maybe it sounds a bit romantic, but I think, at the end, as scientists, we have to be a little bit romantic, I guess.
Thank you for this motivation. And thank you for taking the time. We are now at the end of the episode. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie.